been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Friday, September 15th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I am not Bill Gunderson. I'm Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, sitting in for Bill today. He's in the office, just resting that voice for another day, so he'll be, should be good to go on Monday. But, of course, it was a kind of economic, indicator by fire hose yesterday, and so, we've taken a deep breath from that, and we'll dive through some other things here. Markets are off to a bit of a down start, mostly red in front of me, except for gold. Gold's up about 1% here at $1,928. Of course, all the looks like all the U.S. indices are down here. Dow is actually leading the way, only down about 0.1%, 32 points to 34,874. We've got the S&P down about 0.5%, down 0.46%. And the NASDAQ is taking it on the chin the most here, down about 0.9% to 13,801. And we've got crude oil above 90, as we said, touched 90 yesterday for the first time since November of 2022. And it's above 90 at the moment, $90.06, actually down 10 cents at the moment. And then finally, we've got Bitcoin here down 1.29% at 26,398. But welcome to the Best Stocks Now show. It's the Friday end of the week edition, and I'm your host, Barry Kite, planner and analyst here with Bill Gunderson. Of course, Bill's out today. He saw the email note that just came out here, to all the subscribers, and we've got, he's working on the newsletter at the moment, so we'll see what stock of the week that we get out of the letter this week. Of course, like we said, there was tons of economic news this week, all that, feeding into the Fed and their rate decision. They'll be meeting on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, and that rate decision will be announced usually around 2 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. I believe that's the 20th. So currently we've got started the week at a 93% chance of a pause or no change at this particular meeting, and actually we're up to a 97% chance of no rate hike at this meeting on Wednesday. So if you look at it, like I said yesterday, it's kind of pretty constructive in terms of the amount of data that the market has digested in the last few days, or at least this week, whether it's the ECB decision in Europe, whether it's the CPI, PPI figures we got here, host of other economic indicators as well. So markets, in our opinion, shown some resilience here for the week, and it really shown some resilience the entire year. The old adage of the market climbing a wall of worry, and we'll actually get into a few of those items that are kind of have been on our wall of worry, and some of them continue to be on our wall of worry as we push towards the end of the third quarter. Only two more trading weeks away from the end of the third quarter. It seems like 2023 is, at least from a market standpoint, has been flying by, and we'll be soon enough here in the next few weeks. Bill will be sharpening his pencil and modeling in some new earnings numbers from the quarter that's about to end. One other note, this is going back history wise. I don't think we call it a happy Lehman Day, but we've always referred to this day, heard this day referred to as Lehman Day, which marks the collapse of Lehman Brothers on this day, and it's been 15 years ago. So It's been pretty hard to didn't really seem quite that long ago. And of course, that was 15 years ago. It was the largest commercial bank collapse in history. And we had, that was on, like I said, September 15th, 2008. It's a 158-year-old institution that went down, 15 years ago today. So, a lot of us remember those images coming out with the, walking out with the boxes and, some t-shirts that, that we can't repeat on air. But, we'll look back, yesterday, market was, really, as Bill mentioned in a note that came out today, this morning, Dow is really, chart-wise, has been looking, pretty, very constructive, in terms of the market. Dow yesterday was up, 0.96%, so almost up 1%, and led the way, with the S&P 500 up, 0.84%, and the NASDAQ up 0.81% yesterday. So, of course, a lot of that news, in terms of stock-specific news, was revolved around the ARM IPO, and as expected, turned out to be the largest IPO of the year. Stock moved up, at one point was up 25%. I think when I looked at it this morning, it was up another 9%. So, stocks, I think, priced around $56 a share or so, and then now currently trading at $64.24. It's actually up only 1% today. So, kind of cooling off there and settling in, in terms of the IPO, as we mentioned yesterday, the shares opened at $56.10. They were priced at $51 each. In other words, ARM or SoftBank, received $51 per share. They only released 10% of the company, so SoftBank still owns 90% of the company. And it didn't take long. We've got we've got a note, I think, out from, let's see, who was it? Oh yeah, Needham. So now that the stock's trading out there, Needham put a hold rating on the stock, essentially stating that the valuation was quote unquote full. In ARM, and in ARM's background, really, at least historically, has really been in the smartphone area. In that business, while has been steady, is also not as much of a growth engine as it has been before, and with saturation, actually could reduce some of that demand going forward. So, the real trick to this ARM stock going forward is going to be, as you can imagine, AI and data warehousing, chips and design. And so that's kind of the, quote unquote, the execution risk there in terms of where it's valued at the moment. You need that, future revenue growth, likely driven, in some form or fashion by, AI in order for ARM to make sense at these particular valuation levels. So that's kind of where ARM is. And, one of the reasons they held 90% of those shares back is because, likely, down the road as they potentially execute that AI strategy, well, what's going to happen with stocks should go up, and then, maybe SoftBank releases some more of that 90% they own. Frankly, SoftBank, was going back in their history, they haven't had very many winners. It's kind of hard, kind of tough to find. So from them, this is a, even they only released 10% of the company, this is kind of, in my opinion, kind of a little bit of a way to exit and show, others that, in the business that they somewhat know what they're doing, right? Because they've had, track record wise, not a great run rate on some of these, names that they've owned in the past. Well, I guess, looking forward to today and on a go forward basis, probably something we'll keep an eye on, certainly until it's resolved. Is, of course, we've got, at midnight, last night, so midnight Eastern, UAW, United Auto Workers Union, went ahead and initiated their first ever simultaneous strike against the big three automakers, GM, Ford, and Stellantis. And it's going to be, at least initially, right, somewhat of a rolling strike. Right now they've got about 13,000 or so workers are going to be from three different factories. One GM plant, one Ford plant, and one Stellantis plant will be affected. So really using an approach where they'll hit some of those different factories, and those companies aren't going to know where that next strike's going to come from. So till they get to the table, that's seems like the game plan at the moment. But well, we're not on strike here. We'll be coming back after this next segment, and we're just getting started here on the Best Stocks Now Show. Welcome back here to the second quarter of the Best Stocks Now Show. I'm your host, Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, serving as relief captain here for Bill today on this Friday, September 15th, the Lehman Day edition of the Best Stocks Now Show. Let's see, quick peek at the markets here. Looks like not too much has changed, roughly. All the U.S. indices are in the red. Dow down 0.3%, S&P down right at 0.6, and the Nasdaq down just under a percent at down 0.95. Crude oil barely just back underneath $90 at $89.84. And I tell you, I was looking at the Brent crude prices. They were over $94.95 yesterday. Currently at $93.50. And that's, like I said, we're, kind of on the show today. We want to go through kind of, where the markets have been since we're getting close to the end of the third quarter, and also, highlight some of the walls of worry that, things that the market has really, truly really been pretty resilient through, during, 2023. And part of that, of course, one of those new, that kind of go forward, on a go-forward basis, wall of worry is certainly the UAW strike here. In terms of it, we've hit some of the numbers in terms of if every member of the 150,000 struck at one time, it'd be in 10 days really would cost roughly about $5.6 billion to economic GDP. Looks like that's going to be more of a potentially a rolling type strike, which will, number one, will help, could potentially prolong the strike because it's going to, allows, the, quote unquote strike budget for the UAW to last longer. The other thing is, they're going to target particular parts of the industry, particularly parts of the auto industry that have some of the higher margins. For example, I think the plants named here, one's going to be a Ford Bronco plant first. I don't know on the Stellantis side. I want to say it was, it's one of the Jeeps here. Got the data here. Ford Bronco, Jeep Wrangler, and, on GMC side, the GMC Canyon. And so those, what they're hitting there is, they're going to hit profitability. So they're striking at the plants that are going to be adding the most margin, to those automakers. So pretty tactical, actually a pretty tactical strategy in terms of how they're doing that. And we'll see how that plays out. Of course, we've seen a couple of notes out here, and the big winner in a lot of this will, at least initially, and certainly if it's protracted, is going to be Tesla. Other, of course, there are, you know, non-union automakers, some other ones that will benefit as well. And Bill touched on these earlier in the week, Toyota, Honda, Mercedes, and like I said, Tesla has certainly looks to be kind of the clear winner from here. Because if you, you know, if you think about it, a lot of Ford, GM, they've been adamant in terms of the fact that the move to EVs and producing more electronic vehicles has hasn't been a moneymaker for them. It's actually been a cost center. And so, number one, Tesla already has that margin power, pricing power. They're producing more vehicles, so they're able to, overcome a lot of those fixed costs. They've already kind of made it over that piece where they're covering all their fixed costs. And a lot of your larger automakers are still behind the eight ball on that. Tesla certainly looks to benefit that. I mean, they already had a competitive advantage, and in my opinion, this is going to essentially helps widen that competitive advantage as well. So that's where that's where we're looking at just in terms of how the strike can affect other pieces of the business. I was looking at Tesla this morning, even on that news. I think Tesla was down just a tad bit. Let's see. They are, down a 0.5% today. And you take, you take Ford and even, I think the big three automakers, at least Ford and GM, were actually holding up pretty well. Ford's up, 0.75% today. And GM looks to be, they're up 1.96%. So, I don't think there's been any deal, but at least so it just tells you that the market is priced in a good bit of at least of this initial shock. As obviously if it was a protracted, that's certainly going to weigh on those companies over time. Let's see. We'll also from an economic calendar standpoint, we've had one more day of data releases here. We got U.S. import prices today. We got the Empire State Manufacturing Survey. We got some industrial production. I think at 10 o'clock when we started the show, we were going to get consumer sentiment. I was pulling that up. I haven't seen the reading there. Yeah, it looks like consumer sentiment slipped a bit in September, so that kind of goes a little bit in line with that when you look underneath the surface of that retail sales report yesterday, where essentially retail sales, when you cut out gas and autos, was actually up only 0.2% when expectations were 0.7. So consumer sentiment kind of shows that as well, in terms of slipping a bit on this latest survey. From a one unique thing, at least I've been looking at what are the potential future tailwinds for inflation, right? We've seen it at the gas pump, seen it in oil via oil prices, and we got export import prices today, and actually both of those were surged on the increasing. Export prices actually went up 1.3%. Exceeded it was only estimated to be up 0.4, and it's actually the biggest monthly gain since May of 2022. Export prices also rose. They rose 0.5%, was expected to be 0.3, and that's also the biggest increase since May of 2022. So we've got, those are parts, pieces of that wall of worry that we're watching. Certainly, with the Fed being data dependent, looking at some parts of the economy reaccelerating. Actually, industrial production, improved. In the Empire State Survey was actually pretty positive too. We'll hit those numbers real quick when we come back, but we're blazing through the first half of the Best Stocks Now hour on this Friday, and when we come back, we'll look at dive into some more worrisome spots that we're keeping an eye on, and we'll also get into some individual names. But I'm Barry Kite, and we'll be right back. It's the Best Stocks Now show.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of the Friday, September 15th edition. It's the end of the week edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, taking the wheel for Bill today as he's getting that newsletter today. And of course, if you'd like to get a copy of the newsletter, feel free to go to GundersonCapital.com. You're able to go there and sign up for a free 2 weeks of the newsletter there, and we'd certainly appreciate that if you did. Also welcome to give us a call at any time. You got anything going on in your allocation or any kind of financial planning issues you come across, feel free to give us a ring. We're always here to bounce some ideas off of. Direct line 855-611-2378, and that's 855-611-BEST. You'll probably reach Edie, and she'll be happy to direct you where we can help you the most. So feel free to give us a ring there. Well, markets wise, you know, still basically right at the right where we left off. Only two things I'm green on my screen here at the moment are crude oil at $90.41 and gold up almost a full percent today at $1,928. I think that has to do with a little bit of the dollar weakening today, helping gold. From a wall of worry, like I said, we were looking back just in terms of, you know, where the markets have been. We've really overcame a good number of issues so far here in 2023, as the as the markets kind of shrugged off a lot of these kind of headwinds and or uncertainties. When you look at, you know, kind of where the markets are at as of, you know, as of year to date, you had the, you know, NASDAQ's up almost 33%. You've got the S&P 500 up a little over 17% year to date, and the Dow up a little over 5%. Obviously, the Dow is going to have has had much less participation for those "quote unquote" magnificent seven that have driven a good portion of those returns, particularly in the Nasdaq and also in the S&P 500. But you know, when you look at the numbers, right? It's if we woke up, you know, today after, you know, going to sleep on New Year's Eve, woke up today, wouldn't really know how we got here. But when you look at where we're at, I mean, we've had number one, you know, restrictive monetary policy for a while, certainly in 2023. We had a banking crisis in March. We had a debt ceiling debate in June. We had the U.S. downgrade this summer. We also had, we've had highlighted economic struggles in terms of trying to get China back on track from an economic standpoint. We've been highlighting and highlighted some of the issues that Europe is facing. Highlighted some of those yesterday as the ECB raised another quarter point there. And just a side note on the ECB, you know, the real consensus is, that they may not raise again in this particular cycle. You know, number one, they may not be able to. They may like to, but they may not be able to. As you've got the Eurozone approaching or potentially already in some form of recession or contraction. Other things, of course, now, you know, we've got, as Bill highlighted earlier this week, we've got a, you know, potential looming government shutdown at the end of September. We have, of course, we just had the, we've got some labor strife around the world. Obviously, the UAW strike, you know, just kicked off at midnight, you know, last night or early this morning, depending on how you want to look at it. We've also got, you know, labor disruptions around the globe. We highlighted the LNG strikes in Australia that have been affecting liquid natural gas, LNG deliveries. That is another headwind for Europe and a tailwind for their inflation. Obviously, the Russian-Ukrainian war doesn't seem to be going anywhere, and of course, you know, that whole conflict, you know, taking occurring around, you know, a handful of nuclear reactors around that part of the globe, which, you know, at any point in time could be potential disaster there. So, you know, the old adage of the market climbs a wall of worry is certainly in full effect in 2023, and certainly has been. You know, there's a reason why that saying's been around forever. But you know, when you look at it, we've got you've got here, for example, restrictive monetary policy. What's it affected? Certainly, we've seen it, you know, easily in the mortgage rates. And I was looking at a recent survey in terms of mortgage rates for this week. The 30-year fixed rate mortgage is at a 7.18%. That's up from 7.12% last week, and 6.02% a year ago. So when we, you know, a year ago we thought, hey, 6%, that's a high rate. Now a year later, it's at 7.18%. And the biggest surprise to me is really in that 15-year. I mean, half of a duration of a 30-year mortgage, and fixed rate average is still is over 6.51. So that part, and it was 5.21 a year ago. So, those are, you know, that's the restrictive an example of restrictive monetary policy that, that we're having. And it's what the Fed is trying to do in terms of slowing down, certain parts of the economy. And we're also seeing that in the jobs market. I saw a report yesterday of, Citigroup, bank was cutting, 15% of their, top two management layers. So, you know, they're cutting costs. Google has laid off, just announced that they laid off hundreds of folks from their recruiting department. So that tells you, number one, we're not hiring. We're getting rid of some of the recruiters, and so we're letting people go and not hiring in that example. And that also comes on the, you know, that comes on the heels where they had already announced, I think, about a 12,000. Headcount layoff in early January. So those are, you know, those are that's what the, you know, it's not, I don't want to say what, that's what the Fed wants to happen. That's what the Fed expects to happen whenever they are affecting and restricting monetary policy. And also what we're beginning to see a little bit is some additional from the U.S. consumer is beginning to get a little stretched, whether it's, you know, whether it's because of gas prices, whether it's because of, you know, persistent inflation for the last, you know, 2 years or since, you know, post-pandemic. But credit card balances have been rising. You know, folks' purchasing power is beginning to get sapped. And, also you're beginning to see higher, credit card delinquencies and charge-offs. I was reading, Capital One announced that their credit card, delinquencies are now higher, or have now climbed higher than pre-pandemic levels. So, if you for the month, they increased their delinquency rate increased to a little over 4%. It was 3.95 in July, and it was 3.49 in August of 2019. So, almost a 0.6% more higher increase in delinquency rates with Capital One. You know, than before pre-pandemic levels. So those are just, you know, little notes where you can, you know, kind of little data points where you're beginning to see, you know, over time, right? You know, the effect of and lag effects of rising rates. It doesn't necessarily take place immediately. Some of that's going to, you know, takes a while in terms of that transmission mechanism from the Fed raising rates and then it finally working its way through the economy. So that's, you know, that's where we're at in terms of restrictive monetary policy. Now, you know, as we kind of mentioned in terms of the percentages, you know, the market's expecting a pause, at least, you know, at the next two, at least currently at the next two meetings. So, you know, who knows? I could set up a situation where, you know, we just maintain rates, where they are, you know, that adage higher for longer, without continuing to raise it, essentially giving more time for, the Fed's policies to creep and work their way into, the different portions, different pieces, of the economy. And when we come back, we actually got some decent data, if we can trust it out of China today. So, they've been ones that are really been hard to, get back on track, and their spending kind of fuels some of the growth for the rest of the world. So we'll look at that when we come back as we wrap up the Friday edition of the Best Stocks Now show. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the final segment of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm your host, Barry Kite, Planner Nanos, here with Bill Gunderson, and wrapping up the week here, wish we're wrapping up on a high note, but it looks like, from a market standpoint, continues to be, get a tad bit worse as we've gone on in the show. We got the Dow down, 0.3%. I think we had some pretty good industrial production numbers come through, and that's probably, giving them a little bit of a bump there. S&P 500 down 0.77% and NASDAQ, down 1.2%. I was looking at the 10-year, treasury here, and I know we were up over 4.3 just a minute ago. Yeah, we're sitting right there at that 4.31, certainly elevated, and that number, you know, that number's kind of been in that, above four now for, you know, really since, I guess since about the beginning of August. So, you know, that certainly that number needs to come down at some point. You know, it's really the market's been driven a lot by PE expansion, which, of course, as we all know, as interest rates go down, it makes people, more palatable to paying more for PE ratios. So PE ratios usually expand during that time. So, the 10-year kind of keeping a lid on the market, particularly on the NASDAQ side. We did have a few notes here. You know, most important thing, I think, is, you know, one of the bigger wall of worries, right, has been, just economic struggles abroad, not necessarily here in the U.S. We've actually held up pretty nicely, and likely better than expected, than the Fed expected. You know, China actually, you know, we take some of their numbers with a grain of salt, but their jobless rate edged down to 5.2%. Their retail sales growth was a 3-month high in August at 4.6%. Industrial output rose 4.5% in China, the most in 4 months. So apparently they unleashed the economic fire hose as well today or early this morning. But those are, you know, those are positive signs. As, you know, say what we want about China and the you know, geopolitical side of the equation, but you know, they're a growth driver, right? Second largest economy in the world, behind the U.S. And then, of course, the ECB, European Union, Eurozone, not far behind that. And those two legs of the stool have struggled. So good to see at least some decent or positive numbers out of China. One issue I do see that's kind of one of the weak spots in the market today has really been the tech names, and that's bleeding through to why the NASDAQ was down about 1.2% when we checked it a moment ago. And it really revolves around Taiwan Semi. They came out with a note essentially, kind of just warning or telling their suppliers that they may not need they may not need as much supply for a period of time as they work through some supply and some demand softness, and that's kind of meaning they don't need the equipment. So if you look at something like ASML, which today, last time I checked, it was down a little over 3%. So down 3.8% here. And that's, essentially they're told their suppliers to delay some chip equipment deliveries. And, you know, obviously TSM or Taiwan Semi is a fab company. So they actually make the chips. A lot of your other companies are just design the chips. But, ASML provides the equipment to TSM to actually build the chip. And so they've had a little bit of a slowdown there. A note in here kind of mentions that they don't expect the slowdown to be very long, but that is certainly weighing on some of that the semiconductor industry this morning. Let's see what other excitement. In terms of the Dow, you've got kind of some of the bigger leaders in the Dow at the moment. American Express, which is kind of surprising based on some of the Capital One information that came out there, although I don't think American Express really keeps a lot of that debt on their books. Walt Disney, Disney's up 0.7%, Visa's up 0.65%, so it looks like two of the larger payments or credit card companies are driving the Dow a little higher. News on Walt Disney is they might actually sell ABC, so I've got there's potentially two buyers. Let me pull up the name. Yeah, so they've got essentially they're looking at they've got Byron Allen, who's a big media mogul, who's looking to potentially he made a $10 billion offer to Walt Disney to purchase ABC's TV cable network, some local stations, as well as FX and National Geographic. So there's a pretty interesting story there. Of course, Bob Iger's talked about potentially liquidating and or spinning off, right, some of those TV only companies. So that'll be pretty interesting to see how that will play out. But overall, it's we continue to look out there and kind of keep an eye on the horizon and what's going on in the world, and certainly a lot of data points, a lot of information this week, which is pretty surprising since it wasn't like we had a ton of earnings news, but really strictly in that economic arena, and with some of the UAW turmoil and some other things going on out there. We'll look next week can be dominated really by the Fed speak and Fed talk, where they're meeting on Tuesday, and then we'll get the rate decision on Wednesday, and right after, usually it's at 2, and then we'll have Powell usually speak at 2:30 Eastern. So always a ride. You never know exactly what's gonna come out of his mouth, or in reality, you don't know how the market's gonna react to what comes out of his mouth. So we'll get some rest this weekend, and be ready to jump back at it when we come back on Monday, and prepare for the Fed week ahead. But if you'd like to know what we're doing ahead of time, go ahead and go to GundersonCapital.com, grab two free weeks of the newsletter, or you're always welcome to give us a call at 1-855-611-BEST, and have a great weekend, everyone.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.